one of those gathering places is a place where I was last weekend called Moab, Utah. And it's a gathering place of adventure enthusiasts, people who are into mountain biking, ATVing, Jeep, driving 4x4s, rock climbing, river rafting down the Rock, Colorado River. And there's spectacular beauty. There's Arches National Park. Took that picture as the sun was going down last Friday night. And it was spectacular beauty as you're there. It was just, wow, God, I'm so thankful for the world that you've created. I was with a couple of other old guys my age, guys that were in my men's group in Calgary. We went biking through these canyons on these mountain bikes and had a fantastic time. It was interesting because we'd get shuttled up onto these, like, 10,000 feet high and then ride bike down, and it would take a few hours. It was just a blast. And there's an adrenaline rush that happens. I mean, there's guys that are just, like, way over in another orbit than we are in terms of that adrenaline rush. But there's always that sense of, I just want a little bit more. A little bit more. If I just get a little bit more of that. You know, there's a moment in time sometimes where we feel like, ah, this is it. It might be mountain, it might be whatever, but we get that sense. I think there's another picture here of us right there. There's a cliff very close to those cliffs behind me where there's one gal at the shuttle driver. We drive up and these get dropped off, and he was telling us my ankles are shattered because I fell off of a ledge. But there's another girl, and she climbs these cliffs 400 feet high. She's got this one that she climbs off of, and free climbs, and then she base jumps off of it with a parachute on her back. But there's not quite enough here in Moab for her. So in order to get more, she travels all over the world doing this. There's always something that seems to be more in our lives that we're longing for. And you think, man, if I could... We bumped into one guy. We ended up driving our van up to over 10,000 feet high. There's this long bit of story behind it. But we left it there with no plan of how we were going to get it. We just rode down for 4.5 hours. And then we got into town, and later on that evening, we're going, okay, we gotta go pick up that van. How are we gonna do it? We were looking into taxi. Oh, that's a lot of money. We were looking into shuttle or whatever. And finally, just went, let's just walk down the street and see if we can find somebody to drive us up there. So we walked down the street, and I saw this one guy shutting down. There's bike shops all over down the main road there. And he was just closing it up. And I went up to him and said, this sounds really random and really bizarre, but you know, Warner Lake up there at 10,000 feet? Well, he goes, you left your vehicle there, didn't you? He says, well, for $50, I'll drive you back up there. So we drove up with this guy. I had an hour and a quarter in the van with him. And it was just a really awesome conversation, talking about everything under the sun. But here's a guy in his mid-20s, and you would think he's living the life. He's mountain biking every day. He's working in a bike shop. He takes the off-season, goes to Aspen or Breckenridge or one of these places, these ski areas, and snowboards all winter, works there. And then talking about relationships, oh yeah, I get a girlfriend for the summer, and then she's off again. And then he talks about how he's looking for something. He says, last winter I didn't go and work at the ski place. I went on a vision quest ride. He says, I rode my bicycle from Phoenix to Florida. And he says, I'm kind of trying to figure it out. Well, we had a really neat conversation, and the three of us got together, and wow, there's a guy who's really looking for what life really is about. And I think so oftentimes we just think if it's a little bit more fun, more pleasure, more in our relationships, more in our life, we'll get there. But is more it? I got to thinking this summer, and it's interesting because there's a little place up on those cliffs up there where you can ride your bike through, believe it or not. We didn't take that trail. It's called the Portal. And it just gets you through, and then you're able to ride down this cliff, and it's like death on your left kind of thing, if you're going to go down there. But it's a way through. And I was just thinking, is there a way through to that fuller, richer life that we really are looking for, that place of joy? And I really believe that kind of hidden a little bit in this story is that place to get there. And it's simply this, it's Thanksgiving. It's a place where we end up in a place of thanks. It's very profound, I think, that Jesus, he prayed over the bread. It wasn't much, it was only 7 loaves. And he thanked God for it. And And then we took what was there, and God took it and did what only God can do with it. Can there be a sense, even if it doesn't mean some massive miracle on some, but that God would work a miracle of joy in our lives if we take what we have and we just are thankful and then see what God will do with it? I think we've all been around people who seem to just not be thankful about anything. They always believe that they're entitled to more. Maybe we see this in ourselves sometimes. The food is never done right. Maybe the turkey isn't going to be done just right. The traffic isn't to their liking. Policies are not good enough. Leadership is incompetent. They just look at things and they're just this non-content, non-thankful person. Sometimes this can be a person who seems to have everything, which is so ironic. One of the reasons I love traveling to second or third world countries is because I know that I am always bound when I get there to find somebody who lives in maybe the most miserable environment you can possibly imagine and yet are filled with unspeakable joy. I went to Zimbabwe in February, and it ranks number two right now on the most unlivable countries in the world. I think Canada's somewhere up on two or three or something like that, and most livable, you know, as these indexes go. This fellow named Pastor Henry lives in a place called Rugari in like a very ramshackle area of Harare, and yet an outrageously joy-filled person. Totally amazing. Check him out. Yeah, there you go. There's a picture of him. He's going, I am so thankful for this teacher here who's willing to work for way less than she worked for down the street in order to work at for the kids, these orphan kids that we're working for. And we're running a school here in my church. He's just outrageously filled with joy. You go to the next picture. Here he is just laughing his head off with my niece who's put his baby, there's his wife as well. Just having a blast. Then the traditional thing, putting the baby in the back there. And he's standing in front of, you can go back to that original picture. That one. And he's standing in front of his house, which is a two-bedroom house. And he's saying, I am so thankful. I used to have 24 people living in my house. Now I only have 12. It's a two-bedroom house. And he's saying, the reason for that is because, you go to the next one, another house got donated to them where they're able to have bunk beds. And now they have about 40 orphan children from some of the worst environments you can imagine living there with some incredibly loving Christian leaders looking after them. He's totally thankful. He's saying, look at this. Some people came in and painted this place. He's pointing at it. Check out the next picture here. There he is with his wife and his youngest child. I think he has another five, other than that one. But he's standing behind that house where they're housing all these young gals who are truly destitute, homeless, without them. The HIV scourge is horrific there. And he's saying, I'm so thankful. We're going to get a fence here built around this house. And that banana grove behind them is going to have to come down. But some people are going to build a fence around here. That's so good because a few months ago, some traffickers, slave traffickers, came and... that's weird. Came in and stole a 13-year-old girl out of here. He said, now Henry, before he was a pastor, was a cop. So he got a few guys together, and he tracked these guys down. Finally, this 13-year-old girl tied to a tree next to a railroad. And he said, before the cops got there, we executed a little justice ourselves. But they got the girl back. And he says, I'm so thankful we're going to get a fence around this, because I won't have to sleep outside of the house anymore to protect them. He was filled with thankfulness. It was an unbelievable experience. And you get into those things and you go, how is it that some of the people with the most difficult situations are able to be thankful, are able to be joyful? And I think the portal, the doorway into joy is through thanks. It's through thanks. Thankfulness, when you start going through the Bible, it leaps off of the pages. You think about the children of Israel in the book of, and you look in Numbers, and there was these people that just needed some food from day to day. You know, not the big turkey dinner with all the fixings, but just food. And God provided them for them in a very basic way. He gave them manna. And these flakes come from the sky. And what is it? And it was a mystery to them, but they would take it and they would make bread out of it. And it was always enough for that day. If they tried to take too much, maggots would come in and it would be uneatable by the next day. But there was always enough. And God wanted them to live in thanks for just that bread. But you know, like people always are, like we all are, they start talking, oh, it was so good back in Egypt. We won't talk about the slavery thing, but they had onions and leeks and meat and all that. They start longing for that. And you see God's heart just being so grieved because they became unthankful. And there was fire and there was plagues, and God had, there was some pretty drastic discipline for an unthankful spirit. You look in the book of Psalms, Psalm 69, and you read in there, and it talks about, I'll just read this, it talks about a thankfulness in verse 8 of Psalms, I'm sorry, verse 3. Psalm 69. And it says, then I will sing praise to God's name with singing, and I will honor him with thanksgiving. For this will please the Lord more than sacrifice and cattle. It says, more than sacrifice, more than service, more than all that we can kind of give to God, is having that thanksgiving in our spirit. It's a really big deal. Looking a little further in the book of Daniel, we find the story of Daniel, and it's very fascinating to see how he prays. And in Daniel chapter 6, verse 10, we find a situation where Daniel gets slapped with a law that prohibits prayer. And he's a government official and all, but if you pray, you're going to get tossed in with the lions. And what does Daniel do? He doesn't rail against God or go and fight the law and become all activistic. He just goes and he thanks God. It says in Daniel 6, verse 10, prayed three times a day, just as he had always done, giving thanks to his God. Could part of the miracle of the lions' mouths being shut come from the fact that Daniel lived in thanksgiving? I don't think it was a legalistic bowing his knees every three times a day. I think he just lived in thanksgiving. He just lived in the spirit of thanksgiving. It just kind of was part of who he was. And it was that portal into seeing God do amazing things. You look at the Apostle Paul in Philippians. He talks about, I'm learning how to be content, whether with much or little. And you read the book of Philippians, and it's the ultimate book on the theme of joy. And you find him, Paul, writing from a cold, damp prison cell. And he talks in Philippians 4, verse 6, about telling God what you need, is what the verse says, and thank him for what he has done. It's like thanksgiving and a meaningful interaction with God is what goes together. It's actually what sees God work. Now, being the first Sunday of the month, we always have a tradition of doing communion here. And initially, I was looking at the whole idea of the text that we had chosen for this morning, the breaking of bread and communion, which is the breaking of bread. And I just thought, there's definitely a connection. But I didn't realize to what degree there was a connection until I started looking into it. And I realized that, you know, on that night when Jesus started this tradition, he took the bread and it said, he gave thanks for it. And in 1 Corinthians 11, verse 23, if you want to put that up there, 1 Corinthians 11, 23, this is something I read every month when we do communion, but this is an important piece. He says, for I pass on what I received from the Lord himself. On the night he was betrayed, the Lord Jesus took some bread and gave thanks to God for it. Then he broke it into pieces and said, this is my body, which is given for you. Do this to remember me. The actual word for that there is eucharistio. Like there's another proper way in the Greek to pronounce that, but Eucharist. The Eucharist actually means thankfulness. It actually means thanksgiving. And I know in more traditional churches, that's what they call it. They call it the Eucharist. We're doing the Eucharist together. Eucharistio actually means thanksgiving. Digging a little deeper into that word, when you go one step further, on the next slide, you see that there's the the charis part of it means grace. And the chara part of that root word eucharistio means joy. That through this act of thanksgiving, there's a place where we recognize that it's grace. Everything we get from God is just sheer gift. And the place where we find ourselves in is joy. Grace, gifts are grace when they're received without expectation or based on reward, but just received with open hand. That's communion. That's what we celebrate when it comes to communion. That's a spirit that God does inside of us when we live in a Eucharist life. I found a quote by one fellow, Alexander Schmemann. He says, "The only real fall of man is the non-Eucharistic life lived in a non-Eucharistic world." To live without thanksgiving. I came across a writer this last week, just by happenstance. And it's actually, I was doing Christianity Today, and I read about an author, and her name is Anne Voskamp. And I thought, oh, wow, she's interesting. She's a Canadian. That's cool. I'll check this out. So I went online, and there's a website for it. And it was a book that she's written called 1,000 Gifts. And it had the first, she's a wife and a farmer's wife, lives on a farm with 6 kids, homeschools them, living a very kind of the regular life, you can imagine that way. If you can imagine that being regular. But she's also a writer and a bit of a poet. And so I opened up the website and I read the first chapter. They oftentimes give you the chapter as a teaser. And I read the chapter and I was just moved. I just went, wow, this is Thanksgiving. This is what it's all about. And so I thought, well, I need to get that book. And so I asked Joanne, our ministry, could you call down the blessings and reserve me a book? And it turns out there was one left. And so she reserves it. And then I looked and I saw the cover of it. And I thought, wow, that cover looks pretty feminine. I don't know, like a mountain biking 1 week, and maybe it's just a woman's book. So I just went, well, maybe I'm not going to go and get it. Then I read a review by a guy I respect at Harvest Bible Church. He says, "Men, please don't shy away from this book because the cover appears to be feminine." This is not a chick book by any means. Anne Voskamp raises questions that every human being is asking. She tackles issues that we struggle with, and she writes about life in a way that will draw you in and keep you riveted to every word. This is simply the most well-written book I've read in a long time. So that's great. Okay, I can go down to Blessings and pick this thing up. So I go down to Blessings and pick it up, and the clerk comes and asks me, you know, could you help me? And I said, actually, I reserved a book. It's called 1,000 Gifts. It's back there underneath the main wagon. And so she goes and she gets it for me. And she brings it, and she kind of escorts me over to the clerk, and she's looking at it, and she goes, this man here, and she looks back at him, he's buying this for his wife. I haven't said anything about that. But believe me, it is a great book to read. And I'll read it unabashedly. But the point that she makes there is that the Eucharistio, the thanksgiving, always precedes a miracle. The miracle of joy in our lives. It's always preceded by the spirit of thanksgiving. And she points out in there that when Jesus came and took the bread, he gave thanks. And a miracle happened. There was the Eucharistio, same word used, Jesus gave thanks, and there was the multiplying of the loaves and fishes. He took the bread and gave thanks at the Passover, knowing that within 12 hours he would be giving his last breath, saying it is finished. The miracle of Jesus enduring the cross for the joy set before him. And in the same way, our lives oftentimes go through that time where we go, God, how can I? It might be in the most common of life, or maybe even the most difficult of circumstances, live the Eucharistio of life. And I love how Anne here deals with that. And she writes about that. She says, how do I do this? And I'll just read it. She writes, "Some days I coax hard. I'm tired. I don't know if it's the way honey light runs down the wall and sticks to all the dust lying still on any surface, or if a fog films over my eyes, but I am clear to see. That morning, the washing machine hums early, and the kids, all six, already studying long. I tried taking up Eucharistio because I have known it before, that joy miracle that might happen even now and here. So she goes through this list, and the point of this book is, she had come across a book called 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, kind of that bucket list. And it's interesting, last Easter, my brother's going this afternoon, I found that same book and brought it over here, chatting about all these places to see. She said, can life be full of thankfulness and joy and contentedness in my everyday life? Or does it have to be about all of these, whatever it is, experiences, more of whatever, more? And she comes to this point that I'm going to start writing 1,000 things I'm thankful for. I'm going to keep a journal. I'm going to write these out. So throughout this book, she writes them out. Number 243, clean sheets smelling like wind. 244, hot oatmeal tasting like home. 245, bare toes in the early light. He says, she writes, I pick up the journal. Paul had twice said it, and I mustn't forget it. He said, I have to learn. And learning requires practice. Sometimes even mind-numbing practice. C.S. Lewis said it too. To a man looking for fullest life, is what C.S. Lewis writes. If you think of this world as a place intended simply for our happiness, you find it quite intolerable. Think of it as a place of training and correction, and it's not so bad. And she writes, it might even be good. So I, too, can be like our children and the everyday training, memorizing the Latin paradigms with the practicing chants, the washing machine dings, and I light. This is why I have never really learned the language of thanks in all things. Though pastors preached it, I still came home and griped on. I had never practiced. Practice until it became the second nature, the first skin. Practice is the hardest part of learning, and training is the essence of transformation. Practice, practice, practice. The training might prove to be the hardest of my life. It just might save my life. She's finding that through writing out her list of 1,000 blessings, 1,000 gifts, she's finding that it is transforming her life. She goes on in page 58. She says, she's making a pizza. She's thanking God for that. She says, for a moment, it just all seems so trivial in a world so full of pain. She says, I think of how God glory in a cheese ring might seem trifling, even offensive. To focus the lens of the heart on the minute in a world mangled and maimed and desperately empty. I know there is poor and hideous suffering, and I've seen the hungry and the guns that go to war. She actually volunteers with Compassion International. I have lived pain, and my life can tell it. She was 4 years old when her older sister was run over by a truck in her driveway, and she saw that happen. She says, I only deepen the wound of the world when I neglect to give thanks for early light dappled through leaves and the heavy perfume of wild roses in early July and the song of crickets on humid nights and the rivers that run and the stars that rise and the rain that falls and all the good things that God, that the good God gives. Why would the world need more anger, more outrage? How does it save the world to reject unabashed joy when it is joy that saves us? Rejecting joy to stand in solidarity with the suffering doesn't rescue the suffering. The converse does. The brave who focus on all good things and all things beautiful and all things true, even in the small, who give thanks for it and discover joy even in the here and now, they are the change agents who bring fullest light to all the world. When we lay the soil of our hard lives open to the rain of grace and let joy penetrate our cracked and dry places, let joy soak into our broken skin and deep crevices. Life grows. How can this not be the best thing for the world, for us? The clouds open when we mouth thanks. Very profound. To come to God and say, God, I'm thankful for this. And so this morning, we're going to practice a little bit of that by being thankful around tables. I want to invite the band to come up. And we're going to sing a song, and then after this song, which is a thank you song, thank you for saving me, we're going to invite you to, after we've signed through this song once, to just, generally we either pass a plate, or if we haven't been here for communion before, or we come into the front and take it. But this morning, because this is Thanksgiving, we're going to invite you to come. There's going to be a leader at each of these tables. And you're just going to gather and stand around the table. And what they're going to have in their hands, and they're going to give you each one of these, is a Thanksgiving Eucharist liturgy. And as you know, we aren't especially traditional around here. We don't do liturgy. But this is something that Pastor Kevin found, and I think it's just some great words to read together. So there's the light print that the leader will read, and dark print that you can read together as a group. And then after you've read that, then the leader with the subway type serving gloves on are going to break the bread, give you each a chunk of bread if you'd like to participate in this, and then pass the cup around, and you'll just take the bread and dip it in the cup and take communion together. And then at the end of that, we've got all sorts of goodies this morning, don't we? We've got a page that actually comes out of that website and the scan. Grace, Joy, Eucharistio, something to take home. And on the back, it's entitled 10 Reasons to Count Blessings and Find Joy Right Where You Are. So you can take that home with you. You can take that back to your seat together. And then we'll sing another song before you close. And you can read it while you're waiting for other members to close. But for now, we'll sing the song together. So I want to invite you to stand. And let's sing this, Thank You for Saving Me. And then after that, I'll invite you to go and stand around the tables.
Your kingdom come. Your
over to a table close by you. If you'd rather take a pass on this, I just invite you to sit quietly and just spend this moment just in silence by yourself. But if you'd like to participate in communion this morning and you're thankful for what God has done for you, I want to invite you to come to a table, stand around it, the leader will lead you through it, and then dismiss you back to your chairs.
Try to mute him. Because if he gives more instructions, then I'm going to take it.
Yeah, I don't want to stay here.
Okay, I'll stay there.
Thank you.
that was great. Communion and community. The Eucharist. Thanksgiving. May you have a wonderful rest of the day and a Thanksgiving day tomorrow. And I'll pray for you as you head off. One of the things that we do at Coast Hills whenever we do Thanksgiving, we also pass around a basket. This goes into our generous giving kind of fund, specifically to care for needs in our community. So if you'd like to give to that, there'll be a basket going past you during the final song right now. Have just a wonderful Thanksgiving. I invite you to stand together and we'll close with the final song.